Okay, so I want to share with you an idea about Rabbi Riskin, which I think is an interesting take. When we read Perek Chof Zayin, that's obviously the story of how Yaakov takes the brachos from Esav, whatever that means. Use the word take, not steal, so it's pretty neutral. But the question is, what was his plan? Yaakov goes in there. And it's not his plan, it's his mother's plan, but once he commits to it, what's his plan? What is it that he wants to accomplish in this? So that's kind of what I want to do as we look at these psukim, try to understand what his plan was. There is an idea we shared years ago by Rabbi Foreman that his plan should have been to honestly go to his father and say, "Magiali, these are my brachos. You're not allowed to take them. You're not allowed to give them to Esav." That was what he should have done, but he's not brave, not courageous enough to do that. And as such, he goes in backhanded to do what he does. Okay, so that's one possibility. We'll share with you a different possibility tonight. Okay, so the psukim start off. When Yitzhak was old, his eyes were weakened from seeing, and Esav called Beno Hagadol, his older son. I'm sorry, and he called Esav his older son. And he said to him, "My son," and he answered, "Hineni." Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg points out that if you read the psukim carefully, you'll see that there's a lot of gadol and katan here, and he discusses different possibilities of why that is. And interestingly, he does quote one opinion that says the reason why it says gadol by Esav so often is because Esav was a gadol. Esav was a gadol, meaning like a gadol in the terminology that we would use for someone who is a really good person, does lots of mitzvos. In what way was he a gadol? So he was a gadol in the sense that his kibud av ve'em was godless. Okay, so that's one possibility. Other possibilities as well. So he calls Esav, his older son is called, and he says, "My son," he answers, "Here I am." So he says, "I'm old and I don't know when I'm going to die." So I want you to take all your gear and go out to the field and hunt. And I want you to make me tasty food that I love, and I will and bring it to me, and I will eat it before and in order to give you a bracha before I die. Okay, any questions yet?
Why was it necessary for him to give him this description of go out and make me a meal that I like before I give a bracha? What is that?
Well, which part of it? Meaning that I like, or just why does he ask for a meal, or both?
Well, the whole thing. Oh.
Yeah. So I mean, one
possibility. Yesterday, I was somewhere between Mechamarav that says something about that Yaakov, I think Yitzchak recognized Yitzchak's challenges and faults and whatever, and knew that his one big, he recognized that his one really big shining aspect was his kibbutz of aim, and so he set him up to be like, set him up for success kind of thing, right, by asking him to fulfill this and to, and this is something that he knew he could do and can do well, so that he'll be in that frame of mind when he gives him the bracha.
Yeah, but if he thought that his only milah was kid of aim, that who he wanted to give the brachas to? Whatever, that seems a little narrow. I hear what you're saying, and it makes
No,
some
I
sense, but it then puts him in another problem.
Yeah, I mean that I guess raises a separate question, which we're not gonna answer, is what Yitzhak was thinking when he gave when he chose Esav over Yaakov. Yeah, I mean, one possibility of why he goes into such a detailed answer, although Shmuel, I like the answer that you suggested also, is that he needed to be in a good, in order to give a bracha, you have to be in a good, which is nevuah, you have to be in a happy state of mind. So you're in a happy state of mind when you eat food that you really, really like, and you're full, and everything is good, and then you can give a bracha. But even that seems to be, you know, out of character for Yitzhak. We view Yitzhak as such a tzaddik, almost an aesthetic, and now aesthetic, and now it is, here it is. I need a really, really, really good piece of meat, and then my head will be there to give you a bracha. And it's a little harder to see. But okay. Rivka shomat b'daber Yitzhak al Esav. But no, Rivka is listening as this all happens. Vayelech Esav asadeh latzutai lavi. And Esav goes out to the field to hunt food. Also, what's up with Rivka just listening? Does she sit out there all day long listening? Or is she sensed that something bigger was about to happen? And because she sensed that something bigger was about to happen, she didn't want that Yaakov would miss out. So she was eavesdropping then. Not sure, but it's good.
It's tense. What are we thinking here? This is a... Well, only you're either inside or you're outside. And if you're inside, I think you probably hear everything.
But during the day, they used to have... Like, the men had their tent and the women had their tent. So...
But yes, Rivka was, presumably, and there isn't a lot of dialogue between the characters directly. I mean, actually, this, what Yitzchak says to Esav is actually kind of a whole sentence, which we don't get a lot of. Anyway, does he say anything to Rivka? They must have talked about things in general, and presumably they spoke about their children and who's going to carry on whatever it is that Yitzchak and Rivka wanted to pass on to the next generation. So maybe Yitzchak said to Rivka, Esav's my guy. And Rivka's like, I don't think that's a good idea. So she was waiting for this to happen.
Well, how often did Yitzchak ask his kids to go out and get food for him?
He might have asked Esav to go out every day.
Right. I mean, Esav might have been doing this somewhat regularly. Maybe that was a manifestation of his kibbutz av. I'm not really sure. And as far as their dialogue goes, I'm sure there's midrashic literature as to what their conversations are. But as far as the psukim go, they haven't spoken yet. You know, they're going to speak very briefly at the very end. Yeah, it's interesting. Why? What? You know. It could be that Rivka just, you know, she's the caretaker. Yitzchak is old, she's not. And she stays there to take care of him. And this was a unique day because all of a sudden Esav was summoned. Could be. So, Pasuk Vav. Rivka amar al Yaakov bin alei mor, hnei shamati ed avicha medaber al Esav achicha lei mor, havia li tzai bin asedim etamim v'ocheila v'avarechecha lefnei Hashem lefnei moti. So, what happens? Rivka says that... I was listening to your dad, and he said to Esav to bring him food, to give him a bracha. Interesting, it says, Lefnei Hashem, Lefnei Moti, which is not what he says, actually says. He says, Vavilo Chela Vavur Tevarechecha Nafshi B'Tar Mamut. I have no idea if that's significant, but I never noticed that until just now. Vata Ben Ishma B'Kol Yidah Sherni Mitzava Utach. So she says, listen to what I'm about to tell you to do. Lechna l'tzav mekachli misham shnei gedayezim tovim ve'ase otam atamim l'avicha kasher ahev. Go out to the sheep, go get two goats, and I want you to and bring them to me, and I will make them just as your father likes. Because again, the whole thing is that it's supposed to taste the way his father wants. So Esav knows the rest. Yeah.
If that's the case, why didn't Esav just go to the sheep pen and get two sides and make them? Why do you have to go hunting? If he likes sheep meat, he didn't have to go and get whatever he was going to go shoot with a bow and arrow. It's a technical thing, but I don't know why.
Yeah, so Rash...
Rivka was going to prepare it up to make it sound like, to make it taste, I'm sorry, like deer. Esav may not have had that culinary expertise on that side of it.
This seems to be what he's great at, so I would be surprised.
He was asking a deer. I don't know.
Right. So, I mean, Rashi does say, and we did check with David Yitzchaki years ago to find out if this is actually accurate, whether goat and deer actually taste the same. And he said, goat is disgusting. Nobody really eats goat. Deer is a delicacy. So, I mean, I used to watch, when I taught this to my third graders, I said, and I don't know if this was based on something I read or just a guess, but I think there was a secret sauce. You know, like if you marinate or if you cook something in enough sauce, it you can make anything taste the same. So Esav had, you know, some secret ingredients that his deer was, you know, it tasted like a certain way. Okay, so Rivka had the same spices and the same sauces in the house. I don't know. It seems strange to me that...
Speaking as a director of any travel camp.
Right. No, I'm saying if you've ever gone to like the Schmorg at like some of not such like fancy places where everything is just greasy and saucy, at a certain point in time, everything tastes the same. Yeah, I don't know. When you deep fry stuff, it's pretty similar. So I guess that's probably, I would think, you know, a lot of the answer. Why did Esav go? Esav knew that this was a special moment. So if it was a special moment, he would want to do something really special. So to cheat on it and go and get two goats instead, or a goat, it doesn't have to do that. I don't think Esav, you know, if we were to step into Esav's mind, Esav doesn't anticipate that he's going to go leave for a few hours, because it's got to be a while. You know, let's assume that he actually hunted the animal. And we're not talking about kosher shechita. And he's not salting the animal and whatever. Just catching an animal, cooking it, cleaning it, and serving it should take time. A whole deer. Now, maybe, maybe, you know, he roasted it. Maybe she roasted it. And that's why they tasted the same. I don't know. But, whatever it is, he doesn't anticipate that someone's going to go in there and steal the brachos. Because of that, I think he feels safe and comfortable that he can go out. I mean, the Medrash does say that he went out with the sense of, I'm going to get a deer, but if I can't make it work, I can't find a deer, it's going to take me too long, then I'll just steal some other animal and cook it. So L'shem Kibud Av was there. But if he couldn't make it work, he was going to opt to do something else. Okay, so where are we? Okay, pasuk yud aleph. Vayomer Yaakov l'Rivka imo, hein Esav achi ish seir v'anochi ish chalak. So Yaakov says to his mother, you know, Mom, Esav is hairy, and I am not. Ulayim usheni aviv v'ayiti b'inav kim tateya v'ayiti alai klala v'lo bracha. If dad touches me, I'm going to be a liar in his eyes. I'm going to get a curse, not a bracha. So she says, no, don't worry about it. The curse will be on me. Just listen to me and do what I tell you. What that even means, you know, this is not Harry Potter where there are curses flying off the tips of wands and you can jump in front of someone and take a curse. A curse is directed at someone for actions that they did. What does that mean? But perhaps what she's saying is, I'm going to go, if it comes to that, I will walk in and say, this is my fault. I'm the one that recommended that you do this, and I will be the one to take the curse. Okay? So, Vayelech Vaykach Vayaveh Limo. And he goes, and he takes, and he brings to his mother, and his mother makes the food just as Yitzhak liked. Important to note that the Vayelech Vayikach Vayaveh is like that. It should be reflective of Yaakov's mindset. He's doing it, but you know, it's not like this is something that he wants to do. It's I gotta. Okay, so he's doing it. His mother wants. Esav is doing what his father wants, and it becomes this ultimate showdown. Batikach Rivka Bigdei Sabna Agadola Chamudot Asherita Bebayit Vatalveshet Yaakov Bina Hakatan. So Rivka took the clothing of Esav, her older son, that were with her in the house, and she dressed Yaakov, her younger son. These are the special clothing. The Medrash says it was Adam Arishon's clothing, the clothing that had been passed to Nimrod, had been passed on to Esav, and they were here. So Rashi says, why is it, you know, by her, not by his own house? So he understood that his wives were petty thieves, and he didn't really want to keep it there. So another explanation I saw yesterday in the Sefer called L'Pshuto U'Lemidrasho. So he suggests the following, that Nimrod was possibly still alive, and Nimrod wanted his clothing back. Yeah, Esav had gotten it, but Nimrod wanted it back. So Nimrod would do anything to get it back, says the Sefer. So Esav knew if it was by his wife's tent, what would happen? If Nimrod came, either they were weak and they would cave when Nimrod put on the pressure, or if Nimrod said, listen, just name me your price and I'll pay for it, they would sell out. But he knew that his mom was one of integrity and wouldn't do that. Just kind of ironic how it plays itself out. But perhaps it's a better reading of it than they were going to steal it. I mean, come on, Esav was probably a wealthy man. His wives were petty thieves. It seems a little bit, you know, troubling to understand. So then what happens? She puts the clothing on, puts the clothing on his arms and his neck. She puts the food and the bread in the hands of Yaakov, her son. Okay, these are the psukim. Yeah.
It doesn't say bena hakatan this time, but okay.
Yeah, it's a good question. Got to think about that. Okay, pasuk yudchet.
Vayavo aviv,
vayomer aviv.
Once,
didn't it? Yeah, it just said it the pasuk before. Or two psukim
before. That was it. I mean, it's not like Esau was also just the second doll once. I don't know what the...
I think we have it a couple more times later on, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
We have all of you, Vayomer
Avi. Esau is twice.
Yeah, yeah. No. You can...
Yep.
What?
No, I think it says Gadol twice for Esau. But maybe once for each parent.
It could be. I mean, we would have to look past Pasuk Yud-Tet and see what we have there also.
No, Tet Vav is Rivka Esav Bino HaGadol. So Tet Vav, mm-hmm. Rivka gets her Gadol, and Pasuk Alav, Yitzchak has his Bino HaGadol.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe each parent needs to describe the kids older and younger so they're of like mind.
Okay, could be.
Right.
Okay. But so he comes to his father, he says, my father, he says, Hineini miatabini, who are you, my son? Okay, so why does he ask that question, who are you, my son? So is it that Vayomer Avi, he hears the words Avi, my father, and he senses either in the sound of his voice or in the actual voice itself that this is, you know, maybe an imposter. So he asks him, who are you, my son? I don't know. Vayomer Yaakov Avi.
What's funny is he doesn't say miata, it's miata bini.
Right. So meaning he knows it's one of his sons.
Yeah, but it's kind of funny. Like he can't separate the two sons' voices, so it's not like he doesn't know who it is. He narrowed the field to in the whole world to two people, but he can't distinguish one from the other.
Right, so meaning, I guess he knows that if someone is coming to get the brachos, he's just not. It's this. He doesn't anticipate that it's like the stable boy that's coming in and pretending by saying Avi. He knows that, you know, whoever it is one of his sons. But maybe they have the same voice, and maybe, you know, his son comes in. His son doesn't say, "Here's the food, eat, Dad." He says, "I'm here," or he says, "Dad." So yeah, he doesn't know. Meaning Yitzhak does not suspect anything, but maybe Yaakov came to him with a really tough like piece of Gemara that he was working on, and he was stuck on Tosfos, and he came in and said, "Dad," you know, or maybe Esav was back with the food. So he says to him, "Miatavani, who are you?" Vayomer Yaakov l'aviv, Anochi Esav bechorecha, I am Esav, your firstborn. So he says to him, I did whatever you told me to, sit up, eat from my food, please, in order that your soul will bless me. Okay? So obviously the big question is, what? That's a lie. That's an absolute lie. So how do we deal with that? So take a look at the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra gives an answer that I actually like, because I always suspected as a teacher, that's always how I taught it, because I felt like it was the safest way to teach it. He's not really lying. It's Anochi, I am. Esav is your firstborn, meaning there's a pause, a cough, something. He says, there was a pause, a break. Maybe the Ibn Ezra is saying it a little bit differently. I am. Esav is your first. Esav, your firstborn. You know what I'm saying? So by saying the Anochi quietly, he's somehow managing to get around it. I remember as a kid, I used to love leaving class, but I refused. I used to absolutely refuse to use the bathroom in the school I went to, because the bathroom was disgusting. But, you know, the only two reasons you're allowed to leave class when you're in elementary school are because you want to go to the bathroom, you want to get a drink. And the water fountains back, I'm sure you remember when we were kids, the water fountains were not cold. You drank warm water from the water fountain. So nobody wanted to drink from the water fountain either, but you had to have a reason to leave class. So I'd be like, I have to go to the bathroom. And I didn't want to lie. So I'd go out to the hallway, and what would I do? I'd step 1 foot into the bathroom and walk right out, and then wander around the hall for 5 minutes. I didn't lie. I went to the bathroom. I didn't go into the bathroom. I went into the bathroom. It's like, okay, so what are you doing?
I have a better one.
Yeah.
That's a good story, but you care if I take 2 minutes to tell you a different story?
Not at all.
So when I was in 6th grade in RJJ, when I moved to Staten Island, we had to every night have a chavrusa, learn on the phone together. So I had an assigned guy, a good friend of mine, and every day the Rebbe would ask, well, you know, did you learn? So I remember this. So one night, Daniel, he called me. He's like, let's go over. I'm like, I really don't want to. He goes, but the Rebbe's going to ask us tomorrow. I'm like, I'll take care of it. So the next day, alphabetically, so Barrows came before Katzenstein. He says, it's David. Did you learn last night? I'm like, yeah, Daniel called me. He goes, and did you learn? I'm like, no, he called me, but we didn't learn. He goes, okay, good. That's it. I didn't lie.
That is funny.
There you go.
Of course, even with this sleight of hand, verbal sleight of hand, you then have a CC cashier, Debarta Eli. Debarta Eli.
Well, he did. He brought that part. I think that's...
Well,
That's a little bit easier. He brought the food that his father he brought food that his father liked.
That's not what it says. Assisi, I'm doing as you told me. I've done as you told me. Here's the food.
Right. So again, the whole thing is troubling, but Anochi Esav v'Chorecha is a lot harder to, you know, to get around. Like it's
I'm saying that when you can futz around a little bit, but
isn't the classic rationale for being able to lie shalom bias?
Yeah, so that I actually... One second.
Yeah, and?
So yes. It seems like he's doing that here. That's the reason.
How so?
Well, first of all, he doesn't want his mother and father. It's husband and wife. That's shalom bias. That's the right? The epitome is Sarah and Avram. We all know the story. So, man, he's here. Yeah. His mother told him to do this, so he's...
That's very different.
He lied. He's lying. He's Gnevis Das. Even if he said Anochi, your son Esav, he's the older one. He's completely fooling Yitzchak with intent.
Yeah, so I mean the Shalom Bayis fallout is going to be pretty big. Meaning he might have he might have gotten him for the moment, but when everything hits the fan in a couple hours, when Esav shows up.
Between the brothers. Rivka and Yitzchak. Do we see any fallout between Yitzchak and Rivka?
No, because it seems like Yitzchak in the end recognizes that he did the right thing. So the Chizkuni actually says that he says along your lines that he says Letzorach Shah. I didn't see this when I was preparing the shiur earlier in the week, but I was finishing the parsha yesterday and I don't know. Somehow, if you don't do it last minute on Shabbos morning, you're able to slowly go through the parsha more. So it's not just Rashi. If there's a good question, you look around. And so Chizkuni says with Tzorach Shah that he felt that there was a need in the moment to do this. So Rashi's answer is the most famous answer that we know. And Rashi says, how does he do it? Anochi, If you look at the trap, it's a nochi. There's a break in the trap. Esa bechorecha. So this is what he says. I am. Not a pause. I am. I guess there's a comma. Esav is your firstborn. Now, if your father were to say to you, hey, you know, who are you? And you say, I am. Esav is your firstborn. He probably would be like, why are you talking about yourself in third person? Like, that would raise questions that, you know, Yaakov, is everything okay? Or not Yaakov, son, is everything okay? Because that's not how normal people talk. So the Maharal, in the Sefer Gur Aryeh, which is a commentary on Rashi, there's actually several micro-commentaries on Rashi. Gur Aryeh is one of them. So he says, De'im lo kein eichaya mishane lavi v'lomar. Oh, so he says, Anochi Esav ha-mevi l'cha. I am Esav, the one that's bringing to you. I say, I am, and Esav is the one bringing to you. So that's how he understands it. Didn't look in Echaya Mishagel Aviv Lomar Anochi Esav. How else could he lie and say, I am Esav? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sone HaSheker. God hates lies. V'ichi Yikabel HaBracho Derech Sheker. And how could it be that God would allow him to get brachos through lying? And the pasuk proves that he's not lying. Esav amar anochi Esav bechorecha. The Esav amar ani bincha bechorecha Esav. Esav says the words ani bincha bechorecha Esav. The way you read, I know it's anochi Esav bechorecha, but ani bincha bechorecha Esav. Ki milat anochi ba behefsek shelo behefsek shaveh. That anochi is an automatic pause. Anochi, for whatever reason, you have to look through all of Tanakh. The Gur Aryeh says there is a little bit of a break with anochi, whereas ani, right? If you want to say I am hungry, you wouldn't say anochi ra'ev, you'd say ani ra'ev, it's I am hungry. Anochi is a more powerful word that seems to be independent a little bit of what comes afterwards. L'fichach im yomar anochi behefsek anochi. Say again. So let's see what the trap is on Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Here we go. Yeah, so interestingly, Anochi there, it's a tipcha. So a tipcha is a slight pause also, right? So Anochi, I mean, it's not a massive pause, but Anochi Hashem Elokecha would be with a slight pause also. So I guess we'd have to, you know, continue to look through, but perhaps, I mean, it could be that it works. Fine. That's what he answers. And then he says at the end, Haya Yitzchak Mevin. Yitzchak understood that he used an Anochi as opposed to Ani, and that's why he's tipped off and has a problem with it. Okay? So that's one possibility. Says the Or Chaim, Anochi Esav Bechorecha, Perush Liyo Shekanah Bechora Me Esav, Hinehu Naseh Esav Letzad Bechinat Bechora. So I taught this on Tuesday night to a bunch of Shana Aleph guys, and they actually voted that they liked the Or Chaim. Not sure that I like the Or Chaim so much, but he says, by purchasing the Bechora from Esav, he actually becomes Esav in terms of the Bechora. Kila yikare Esav bechoro. Esav is the firstborn, and he is saying, "Anochi Esav bechorecha." Lagabe the brachot, I am Esav, your firstborn. Vomro asiti kasher dibarta perush kitam shetzivelu leEsav kihu benoa bechor v'kim shenatal chora kila adavar baylav. And therefore, when he says Shmuel, to your point, when he says, "I did what you told me to do," he's saying Esav was commanded to go get food. I lagabe the brachot are an Esav. And therefore, that is what I'm doing. You guys like that one? Right, he could have just said Anochi Bechorecha, and then he would have gotten around it. It's true. Okay, so that's Yor Chaim. The Radak's answer is that he was doing what his mother told him to do, Kibud Eim. So, Kibud Eim, and Yaakov, Esav does Kibud Av. And when Kibud Eim and Kibud Av go head to head, even though halachically, when Kibud Eim and Kibud Av, if your mother and father both ask you to do something, dad wins. It's not the case here. Okay, that's a possibility. I'll share with you, Rabbi Riskin. I actually, when I finished and shared this on Tuesday night, I wasn't 100% sold that I liked it, but at that point I was already, you know, in, and I don't know. I guess I'll share this with you as well, and you could tell me what your thoughts are. So let's take a look at the last two psukim. It's the beginning of the parasha. Vayigdlu ha'nearim, the two of them grew up. Vayi Esav ish yodea tzayid, ish sadeh, v'Yaakov ish tam yoshev olim. So Esav was a hunter, and Yaakov was a man of the tents. Which is an interesting thing. It should yoshev ohalim, sitting in the tents. Shouldn't it be sitting in the tent? It's the ohel shel Torah. Why is it ohalim? So an interesting explanation. What yeshiva did he go to? Yeshiva Chaim Ve'Ever. So I always assumed, what does that mean, Yeshiva Chaim Ve'Ever? That there was a big plaque in front of the yeshiva, and it was called Yeshivat Chaim Ve'Ever. Why? Either because Chaim and Ever gave equal money to it, or they were both the Rosh Yeshiva, and nobody wanted to say, oh, I go to Chaim's yeshiva. So I go to Chaim and Ever's yeshiva. So an interesting possibility is Chaim and Ever had separate yeshivas. Yeah, it's like every other Jewish community. They each had their own separate yeshiva. But he went to both of their yeshivas. Why did he go to
lower school and the upper school?
As one possibility. It's like you know, you go to Crown, Ari Crown and Ida Crown. But one possibility is that they had their own yeshivas and each one was a separate style. So why does he go to both yeshivas? Because that was Yaakov. He was an Ishtam Yoshev Olim. He wanted to learn every bit of Torah possible, every style of Torah. And so maybe one was a little bit more, you know, to the right, one was more to the left, one was more Hasidish, one was more whatever. He wants to learn all the forms of Torah out there. It's an interesting possibility.
So then we go to the term Tam in terms of being complete.
Oh, yeah, that's cute. It's good. Okay, he was complete because he learned every form of Torah. In addition to sitting and learning with his dad, there's also, I'm going to run out of time because I'm sharing this, but it is interesting too. There's a medrash that actually says that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov all learned together. There was for 15 years. That's what it says. For 15 years, they learned together. The problem is that Avram was 160 when Yaakov was born. So how does that work? What was Yaakov doing for the first 15 years? So it could be that just for the first little bit, he was just Yoshev Ohalim. He was just sitting in the base medrash. He had no idea what was going on, but he was taking in the Kedusha. Okay, so the second pasuk, though, more important to what to Rabbi Riskin. Yitzchak loved Esav, and Rivka loved Yaakov. So Rabbi Riskin shares a story. He said he had a congregant who was a Holocaust survivor. And this Holocaust survivor told the following story. She said that she had a sister, and the two of them grew up, and the congregant always felt that her parents did not love her quite as much. And there were indications along the way where mom would say something to the effect of, your sister, who is not the rebellious kid, your sister, who is the good kid, if there was a little bit of butter and a little bit of margarine, she would give the butter to the sister, and the congregant would get the margarine. And the man would say, oh, you know, your sister, she davened so hard, she needs the strength. You cut corners, you can get away with the margarine. And when she would really misbehave, sometimes the mother would say here and there as a joke, but the kid didn't take it that way, you know, your sister was born in the house, I know for sure she's our daughter, but you were born in a hospital. You know, maybe the doctors switched you, and that's why you're a rebellious kid. She grew up with this whole feeling of inferiority to her sister. The Nazis came, and it was just her mother, and her father in the house, the congregant. And the Nazis are dragging them all out, and her mom said to the Nazis, kill me, spare my daughter. And she said that was the first time in her life that she felt loved. And she felt that, you know, this moment, even though for everybody else they would talk about the moment of being ripped apart from their family as the most horrific moments of their life, she said actually to Rabbi Riskin, this was actually one of the most amazing moments of my life. It was validation. I finally felt like my parents loved me. Sad, but that's what's going on. But Riskin says that's actually what Yaakov wants. Yaakov wants acceptance by his dad. The whole time he's saying, look, my dad loves Esav. Why? Because he's smooth. He has the ability to talk and get what he wants. I want to be able to do the same thing. I am willing to even lie if that will get me acceptance by my father. So what does he do? He's able to go in there. He gets the courage to say, Abba, Anochi Esav b'chorecha. Not like Rashi, not like the rest of the Mefarshim that they go through loops to say it's not a lie. He outright says, I am Esav, your firstborn. He says that if that's what it'll take for me to say that, to then feel loved, that's what he has to do. And it's so sad that Yaakov has to do that. And Yaakov doesn't get past it so quickly because he takes that piece of Esav with him to Lavan, and he tries to be Esav with Lavan. And then he comes back and he deals with Esav again by trying to be Esav. But it's only at the night that he's wrestling with the angel. What happens on that night? On that night, he finally is able to exorcise Esav from within him and once again be Yaakov. When he returns to his father at the end of Vayishlach, it says that, you know, he comes back and he has a new name. He now becomes Yaakov / Yisrael as opposed to having left as Yaakov / Esav. And so what he's doing or trying to do is he's trying so hard to be validated that he is even willing to behave like Esav. He's even willing to lie like Esav to get acceptance from his father. And that, says Rabbi Riskin, is the sad truth about Anochi Esav b'chorecha. You guys like that one? Not so much.
That's depressing. A little depressing, but sure.
Summary.
Go ahead. Okay. Yeah.